Reformation or Islamization? Our mission has been working behind enemy lines for Christ for 35 years. We are based in Cape Town, South Africa. We do a lot of work in the Muslim world. The subject before me today is Reformation or Islamization. You may wonder, why am I talking on that subject? Our mission has been a mission to persecuted churches. We've been ministering in areas where the church is literally under fire, like in Sudan and Nigeria and the Congo, where Christians are being persecuted for their faith, like in Zimbabwe. In Sudan, churches are being hit by supersonic jet fighters bombing wooden and thatched church structures. This, the birthplace of Christianity in southern Sudan, Fraser Cathedral, bombed 10 times by the Sudan Air Force. The west wall of Fraser Cathedral bombed out. I've ministered over 1,200 sermons and lectures, Bible studies in Sudan, and I don't think I've ever ministered in any church that hadn't been bombed at least once, maybe 10, maybe 18 times in some cases, like in Nub Mountains. This church I went to, and when we arrived there for this venue for our Muslim evangelism workshop, it was bombed, destroyed by helicopter gunships. And these pastors, some of whom had walked 40, 50 miles, walked. They stood with a Christian flag in the ashes of their destroyed church, and they still wanted me to teach them how to win the enemies for Christ. The church was rebuilt. We have taken in tons of Bibles. In fact, by God's grace, we smuggled over 500,000 Bibles and Christian books in 24 languages into 14 different regions of Sudan. Church conferences often held in the open. Why? Their buildings are destroyed. Their towns and villages are targeted. We'd meet in the forest, camouflaged areas, teacher training colleges. Here on Easter Sunday, Resurrection Sunday, church gathering under La Roe, the slave trader's tree, under which their ancestors had been tethered up as slaves by the Arabs, taken to Nile River and sold as slaves to Khartoum. In the distance you can see the church that was founded and planted by the early missionaries, and by God's grace today it's standing and operating, even though it's been bombed 10 times and surrounded by about 140 bomb craters. Smuggling the Bibles into South Sudan, we have come under aerial and artillery bombardments. We've come under rocket fire. On this occasion, high-flying Antonovs dropped 8 2,000-pound bombs on our church conference where we were meeting to run an evangelism explosion clinic. As James Kennedy said, never has an evangelism explosion clinic been more appropriately named. This was a bomb that didn't go off. Another time, another place, but if it had gone off, it would have taken the place we were meeting off the map. Indeed, many churches have been attacked. In Nigeria, 1,000 church buildings have been attacked by Muslims in a 7-year period, killing 17,000 Christians, just in northern Nigeria, just in the last 7 years. In East Africa, we're facing Al-Shabaab terrorists attacking Christians in Kenya and Tanzania, which are majority Christian countries. Car bombs, attacks on shopping malls. Along with this tidal wave of popular Islamic fanaticism on the streets of the Middle East has come a sharp increase of violent persecution of Christian communities. Christians throughout Egypt, where our mission is also working, have been subjected to legal harassment, state persecution, mob violence, arson attacks, arrests, and assassinations. The church in Egypt has a great heritage. It goes back for centuries, back to the first century. There are over 10 million Christians, mostly Coptic Orthodox, making up 12% of the population of Egypt. For over 1,000 years, Egypt was a majority Christian country. Even after Muslim Arab conquest in 640 AD, Christians continued to be the majority for centuries later. Incredibly, the Egyptian church has survived 14 centuries of Islamic discrimination and persecution. Christians being attacked in the streets in Egypt are common. Violence against Christians in Egypt has escalated sharply since the so-called Arab Spring, which the U.S. State Department encouraged, sponsored, financed, starting in 2011. Violence against Christians in Egypt has so exponentially increased, there are car bombs outside churches, and you've just heard now over Easter weekend more Christians being killed in Egypt. This is normal risk for people going to church in Egypt. They know they can be targeted. And the violence in Egypt is absolutely horrific. These Christians, and by the way, Egypt has the largest number of Christians of any country in the Middle East. Syria's got the second largest number of Christians in the Middle East. Iraq used to have a very large number. There used to be a phenomenal number of Christians in Iraq, but they've been chased out since they were liberated from Saddam Hussein. It turned out Saddam Hussein was better than what they have gotten since. And Christians are targeted for assassinations, kidnappings, bombings. It's absolutely horrific. These scenes have all taken place since the so-called Arab Spring, sponsored by the US State Department, encouraged by Obama in Egypt. You see, the previous leader of Egypt, Mubarak, Hosni Mubarak, he put soldiers outside every church and monastery and mission station in Egypt and protected them 24 hours a day. But of course, that has fallen away since the Muslim Brotherhood was sponsored by the State Department to topple this old ally of America's. Coptic children are forced to leave their families and convert to Islam. Churches that have stood for hundreds of years destroyed. Sometimes churches that have been up there for more than 1,000 years attacked, historic monuments, treasures of the church. And so the Christians in Egypt, I mean, here you can see Muslims filming the burning of the St. Mary's Cathedral in downtown Cairo. Regularly there are funerals for Christians targeted and murdered by Egyptians. And this now is so common that Christians in Egypt expect to be killed. In fact, there was a conference, I learned this just last year, when we had a mission team go up to Egypt, that some Christians have come to conferences and workshops like this, and the theme advertised was, when you are martyred, how will you use the opportunity for the gospel? And one of the, I mean, imagine people turning out to, and one of the workshop responses was that when I am to be martyred, I will say to them, you do not take my life from me. I lay it down willingly so that you can know Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior. What kind of people are thinking in this way, so cold-bloodedly, about how they will use their death for Christ to advance the gospel and win their persecutors for Christ? Since the removal of Hosni Mubarak from power by the American State Department, the Muslim Brotherhood has dominated the political landscape, and their party overwhelmingly won in recent elections. Homes and places of worship were torched. The fire brigade arrived 90 minutes late. There are more than 300 mosques in this village of 20,000 people, but only one church, and that got burned down. The Syrian International News Agency reported no Christians were allowed to vote in the area in this Arab Spring election. Copts were forcibly prevented from voting, even though they numbered 50% of the inhabitants of this village. So only the Muslim Brotherhood candidates were elected, because Christians weren't allowed to vote. In Bantin, a mob of Muslim Brotherhood radicals stormed into a church, informed them they no longer had any license, and they need to vacate the building, which would then be turned into a mosque. An Egyptian policeman opened fire on a crowded train targeting Christian passengers as he shouted, Allah Akbar. Hundreds of thousands of Christian families have fled Egypt in fear of the violence from Islamic extremists as a result of the Arab Spring, which was financed and encouraged by the US State Department, which at that stage was under Hillary Clinton. There's blood on the hands of the US State Department and on the Muslim extremists. And yet the Muslims will have these kind of demonstrations to respect the Prophet Muhammad, even though Muhammad was, let's face it, a murderer, an armed robber, a rapist, a pedophile. And yet, Muslims will march with jihad against America as a religious duty, while American government says Islam has nothing to do with jihad, and Islam has nothing to do with Islamic terrorism, and the Islamic State has nothing to do with Islam, and other nonsensical, imbecilic comments. This is St. Mark's Cathedral, the center of Christian life in Cairo, targeted regularly for attack, regularly under siege. And these are funerals, regularly the funerals. Here's four Christians killed by assassins that week in one funeral. And while they were having this funeral, their church came under fire and under attack, and they were besieged by the Muslim radicals. This led to a whole weekend of violence around the cathedral as Muslims stoned them, threw tear gas, shot at them, and the Christians were trying to protect their church that was being stormed by these mobs. This is reality for our Christian brothers and sisters in Egypt. And so when you consider the threat of Islam to America, bear in mind Egypt was for 1,000 years a Christian country. Egypt was once the superpower of the world, and Egypt today is a Muslim country. And remember that what today is called Turkey was Byzantine, once the greatest empire in the world. Once Constantinople was the greatest city in the world. The largest church in the world was St. Sophia in Constantinople. Today it's Istanbul, Turkey. Christians are, in fact, the Turks are literally the largest unreached people group in the world. And Christians are an insignificant minority in Turkey. And what was once the greatest Christian civilization. So don't think that America couldn't become Ameristan, and London couldn't become Londinistan, and Europe couldn't become Eurabia. Because Egypt, Sudan, and Turkey are reminders of what can happen if you allow unrestricted immigration into a Christian country of Muslims, and what happens when the Muslims come to dominate the marketplace and people intermarry with the Muslims, and what happens there. So Egypt has a lot to teach us. There's a lot in the Bible about Egypt. And the Christian church is being severely persecuted in Egypt today. Terror and bloodshed. In fact, it's genocide. By every definition of genocide, the attempt to destroy a people's culture, heritage, language. They don't even speak Copt now officially in Egypt. They've changed the language of Egypt from Coptic to Arabic. Arabic's the language of Saudi Arabia. But now the Egyptians are forced to speak in language that's not even their home language. Christians are being killed in Egypt, and yet the US government under Obama wholeheartedly support the Muslim Brotherhood, gave them the best and most advanced tanks and aircraft you had, but they put sanctions on Egypt since Egypt has overthrown the Muslim Brotherhood and restored order and religious toleration in the country. And just an extraordinary situation that now the United States government is more, well, I trust it's going to change under the new administration, but under Obama for 8 years, it was always pro-Muslim, always pro-terrorist, always anti-Christian. After the American military succeeded in toppling Saddam Hussein's dictatorship in Iraq, making possible the first democratic elections in the country, they said, the result was more radical Islamicists in power who hate Christians, and far more severe Christian persecution than they'd ever experienced in Iraq before. Midnight Christmas and New Year services, which had been held for centuries, were now cancelled in Baghdad, Mosul, and Kirkuk as a consequence of the never-ending assassination of Christians. A blunt statement from the Chaldean Archbishop explained that in the future all Christian services had to be scheduled for daylight hours for security reasons. In 1932, one out of every five Iraqis was a Christian. Today it's less than 1 in 33. Less. Close to 1 million Christians have fled from Iraq since the anti-Christian persecution that's erupted since so-called democracy came to Iraq. You go to downtown Baghdad, and in the Baptist Church, First Baptist Church, the organ has written on it a plaque donated by His Excellency the President Saddam Hussein. Saddam Hussein's entire security detail, all of his bodyguards, came from the Christians. So were his cooks. Why? Because he knew Christians don't assassinate people. He couldn't trust the Muslims. In fact, the Christians knew it was in their interest to keep Saddam Hussein alive because he protected them, as Assad is protecting Christians in Syria today. During one church attack in Baghdad, 52 were killed in what terrorists described as a jihad to exterminate Iraqi Christians from an obscene nest of infidels, they called them. How sad that Sunday schools have to put pictures like this on. Bombing hurts, please stop. And stop Iraqi Christian genocide. It is genocide. that Iraqi Christians have gone from 1.3 million Christians in 2003 to not even 200,000 left today. Not even 200,000. Syria is another example of a strategically important country in the Middle East. Damascus is the oldest continuously inhabited city in the world. Once it was part of the Ottoman Turkish Empire, and when Syria was granted independence from France in 1946, it suffered continuous upheavals and revolutions until the 1970 coup, which brought internal stability when the father of the present ruler, Assad, took power. The Syrian government is a bastion of anti-radical Islamic terrorism. They're harsh, but they keep Islamicists under wraps, and they have for decades. Islam is recognized as the religion of the majority, but Syria is a secular state which accords a large measure of religious freedom for the Christian minority. 6.3% of the population of Syria are Christians, which is the second largest group of Christians in the Middle East now. And the Syrian Christians date back to the first century. I mean, remember, Paul was converted on the road to Damascus. This is a biblical area. And the Coptic Christians don't do things the way we do, but interestingly enough, the so-called dictator, President Assad, is very positive to the Christians. He trusts them and they trust him. And here you can see Assad with a lot of the religious leaders gathering. They look to him for protection, to protect them from the ISIS thugs who are trying to behead them and destroy their churches. It's not unusual to see Christian young people with pictures of Assad. They see him as their only hope, politically speaking, to protect them from the violence of the jihadists who have genocide as their goal. This is a picture in a Syrian church. A lot of soldiers in uniform, Christian soldiers, Arab Christians, who are attending the church and who are working in the military to defend the country from the terrorists. And this may be a bit hard for the average American to grasp, but Assad and his wife regularly visit churches, especially on Christmas and Palm Sunday and Easter, and the Christians want to get pictures taken with the president. They see him as their friend and their protector. And again, do you see any dictator who's able to mingle with people just so freely like this? Can you guess what city this is? It's in the Bible, Damascus. Damascus, the Syrians are a very advanced and a very orderly people. And of course, there's been a strong Christian influence since the first century, so we'd expect some sultan-like there. Well, on the left, you can see what Syria looked like before democracy, sponsored by the State Department, and afterwards, after democracy. Syria under Assad, Syria under the terrorists. This is what meddling in other countries does. It so happens that ISIS has been funded by and supported by Turkey, the Saudi Arabians, and the United States government. In fact, the man who founded ISIS was imprisoned under the Bush administration, released under the Obama administration, and even your chief of staff and vice president testified in the Senate that yes, we did start ISIS, yes, the US has armed and trained ISIS, but we did it to overthrow Assad. The worst group of Christian beheaders in history, founded by the US government and funded and armed by them? Does this make any sense? This is absolutely bizarre. And here you see the result of this policy of supporting terrorists. Al-Qaeda affiliates, are now called Al-Nusra, they're getting open support from the US government. Churches being bombed and destroyed by these terrorists, the very same people as who are accused of having taken on the World Trade Center. Al-Qaeda are supported by the US military in Syria because they're fighting Assad. How is Al-Qaeda bad when they attack you but good when they attack Syria? The West deals with terrorism in a hypocritical way. They call it terrorism when it hits them, revolution, freedom, democracy and human rights when it hits us. And so the people in Syria, they're pointing out, well, the people backing ISIS includes France and Britain and Qatar and Turkey and Saudi Arabia, Israel and America. And ISIS are killing Christians worse than anyone we've ever seen. The first casualty, the first victim of war is always the truth. And where are these people getting their weapons from? And Well, chemical weapons, well, what about phosphor? And remember, the original moderate rebel was Osama bin Laden, supported by America, trained by America, armed by America, because he's fighting the Russians, in the 1980s, without having enough foresight to think, when the Russians have gone, who's he going to be fighting? And ultimately, Osama bin Laden was targeting America, the very people that armed and trained him. This is where policies go. This is ISIS. Beheading people. There's cause and there's effect. You bomb Syria, and next thing, Syrian refugees are pouring into Europe and America. Cause and effect. They call it a civil war, but it's not a civil war, because I don't know if you've noticed, but virtually every single person that's fighting on the Syrian rebel side aren't Syrian. They come from everywhere in the world, even Britain, Australia, Austria, Canada, and the United States. But Syrians aren't there, and they're called a civil war. The West has spent 10 years fighting terrorism and has killed millions doing so. Now they're supporting the same terrorists in Syria. So according to Turkey, to defeat ISIS, you need to bomb the Kurds. We've got nothing to do with it. According to France, to defeat ISIS, you need to overthrow Assad, the one who's fighting them. According to Obama, to defeat ISIS, you need to destroy Syria, who ISIS is targeting. Whereas Putin's only one is saying to defeat ISIS, you need to bomb ISIS, which makes a lot more sense. We told the West it could not support terrorism and give it political cover because it would affect all your countries and your people, but they didn't listen to us. And the very people who are fleeing into the West and destabilizing Europe and America, these refugees, they came from countries that were stable, that were bombed, destabilized by US foreign policy. Terrorism is like a cancer. When you deal with the consequences rather than a root cause, it'll only spread faster. This is a Syrian church. The Syrian church are really dynamic. I don't go for chandeliers and icons, but these people are willing to die for Christ. So I've got to regard them as my brothers-in-law at least, even if not on our denominational level. But look what's happened to these churches. Bombed out, burned out by these cursed ISIS terrorists who destroy the crosses. Here's an American citizen working as a journalist in Syria who exposed the Turkish government aiding ISIS on live television. 2 days later, she's killed in a car accident, and nobody in the US is willing to investigate this murder of an American journalist who was exposing the Turkish connection with supporting ISIS. You can't exactly have photographic evidence of what they're doing, but this is an artist's impression based on eyewitness of what ISIS does when they get to some of these areas, Christian areas. So, yes, difference between democracy and dictatorship. This is the collateral damage from a Hellfire missile. During the Obama administration, he dropped something like 24,000 bombs, smart bombs, killing a lot of people, including civilians. And this is what a Hellfire bomb from a drone looks like once it comes down. So if you don't come to democracy, democracy will come to you. Vote Democrat for kinder, gentler democracy. Democracy coming soon to a neighborhood near you. Now, this may look very anti-American to you, but I just need to tell you this. All over the world, there's an absolute horror and disgust at this endless bombing of other countries. And during the Obama administration, he got a Nobel Peace Prize for being black, and he bombed 9 countries and dropped twice as many bombs on them as Bush did during his wars. But how's this interesting? So you've got such a complex situation going on in Syria. You've got so many countries involved, but basically what it comes down to is Britain, France, and America and Israel are supporting the terrorists, and Russia are supporting the government against the terrorists. This is pretty bizarre, because when I grew up, Russia was on the side of the terrorists, and the allies in the West were against the terrorists. And now the situation is reversed. And Russia now sees itself as the guardian protector of Christians who have been bombed and are sending in their forces to protect the churches that are threatened by ISIS in Syria. So if you haven't heard this from your mainstream media, I just thought I should bring this in as we speak about Islamization and Reformation. It's one or the other, either Islamization or Reformation. Hebrews 13 verse 3 says, "Remember the prisoners as if chained with them, those in the street, since yourselves are in the body also."